Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good news there from the final report from Gabriel Scally. Substantial progress. And that's part of the late Vicky Phelan's legacy. Because she fought so hard and worked so closely with Gabriel Scally, and he was such a big fan of hers. Now, still a lot of work to be done, and there's still people going through the courts and fighting the HSE and the government and labs in America as well. That's still ongoing, so it's not probably as rosy a picture as is painted there in the news. But anyway, I must remind you that tonight at 9:35, Vicky, the documentary, is on. And I've seen this in the cinema, and you know the story, but you probably don't know all the details of it, Vicky Phelan's story. And they had amazing access to Vicky right from the start, when she went public on her story. And it's there, and you'll see her, and it's wonderful. And she's so strong and so amazing. So 9:35 tonight, Vicky. And as you would imagine, it wasn't supposed to be shown till sometime next year, but because of the death of Vicky Phelan, it's been shown tonight. So that's something you should watch. You'll probably cry, you'll probably get angry, and you'll probably be frustrated at the end. But it's a very good watch. 9:35, Vicky on RTE1. Now today, 67,000 young people all over the country, young people of Ireland, got their junior cert results. Now there you go. Slap on the back of the wrist. It's not a junior cert anymore, Ray. It's a junior cycle. Yes. I'm still back in the intercert days. And when you used to giggle to say, I'm going into study for me intercourse. No, it's not the intercert. It's not the junior cert. It's the junior cycle. And the 67,000 people will get a junior cycle profile of achievement. That's it. It's not a certificate anymore. It's the junior cycle profile of achievement. So they have to combine their marks that they get today and the results from their CBAs. And they're the little projects they did in school, and they're marked by their teachers. So that's combined both. And then when all of that is done, they get their junior cycle profile of achievement. Of course, there's no A, B, C, D, E, F, N, G anymore. Like, you need a sort of a junior cycle profile of achievement to work out the grades. But so just for those of you who are from the old school, literally the old school way of doing things. So an A used to be 85 to 100. A B used to be 70 to 85. A C, 55 to 70. A D was 40 to 55. And then an E was 25 to 40. F, 10 to 25. And 0 to 10, NG, no grade. That's the way it used to be. Old school, right? The new way of doing things, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, just to introduce you to it. So if you get between 90 and 100, you get a distinction. So that's better than an A, because you have to get between 90 and 100 as opposed to 85 to 100. So that's a distinction. Then if you get 75 to 90, it's a higher merit. Right? So that would have been a sort of a CB. Or, yeah, it would have been a CB, yeah. 55 to 75, you get a merit. That would have been a C. 40 to 55, they call it achieved. You got an achieved. What did you get in maths? I got an achieved. It just sounds grammatically wrong. But that's what they're calling it. I got an achieved. So you don't get a D anymore. You get an achieved. And then if you got 20 to 40 in a subject, you partially achieved. What'd you get in English? I partially achieved. I got a partially achieved. What do you say I achieved? It's very complicated. I would love to have been at the meeting where they decided that. You know, what are we going to call it? And it is, and I'm still, my jury's out on this one. Are we cozzeting our young people too much? Is this a further example of everybody gets a medal at the sports day? And do we not have to prepare our young people for real life where they will fail? They will fail at some things, and then at other things they'll do well and they'll find their way in life. But if they feel that even when they fail, they've achieved, is that a good message to be sending out to them? I don't know. I don't think so. So, distinction 90 to 100, higher merit 75 to 90, merit 55 to 75, 40 to 55 achieved, 20 to 40 partially achieved, and then an NG is 0 to 20. I'm sitting in my car waiting at school for my son to come up and tell me his junior cycle results. Did the old-fashioned way here, results being handed out just before the home bell goes. Ah, Maeve, It's exciting. We have somebody in our house, got them, did well. Congratulations to our Kate. And you can get them online from 4 o'clock. So back in the day, it used to be around 11 o'clock in the morning that you got them. And it's so long since they did the exam. Like, I think, and I was listening to the Vox Pop on Morning Ireland this morning, a lot of them have just, they've moved on. They've forgotten about it nearly. I've moved on. I'm on with the rest of my life. Forget the junior cycle thingamajig. But anyway, congratulations to everybody. And it's just an exam. And, as somebody said to, well, Jenny said to Kate this morning, in 2 days' time, nobody will be asking you what you got in your junior cycle. People will have moved on as well. So anyway, congratulations. And whatever celebrations you're doing, be safe out there. Now, here's the thing, because it's difficult to know about the Christmas trees and the Christmas decorations, the Christmas lights. There's scientific research to say that it's a good thing to put up the Christmas lights early. Why, you may ask? What does the science say? Well, studies have shown that the bright lights and colours imitate colour therapy, which is thought to increase our dopamine levels, energy levels and boost happiness. There's three pluses there. Dopamine levels up. Yeah, great. Energy levels up. Psh, great. Boost happiness. Brilliant. So that's the beginning of it. But there's more. There's more. The nostalgia factor. So there's sort of a Pavlovian response to Christmas decorations, because for a lot of us, Christmas, we associated with a magical time in our childhood. So when we see the lights and we see the trees and we see the decorations, we get that nostalgic buzz of happiness. So that's more reason to put them up early. And there's one more. Research has shown that people interpret Christmas decorations on a home as a cue that the people inside are sociable. So they think you're more friendly when you have your Christmas lights up early. So Christmas lights, colour therapy, nostalgia factor, neighbours think you're more friendly. Three very good reasons to put them up. And of course, a lot of people associate the beginning of Christmas with the Late Late Toy Show, which is on this Friday. It's quite early. Is it early? A few days, probably earlier than usual, but there it is. Yeah, I was going to go early last weekend, but didn't get around to it. I think it'll be this weekend. And we spoke about this. I think we interviewed the man from Cork. It's a nice idea, eco-friendly idea. Christmastree.ie in Cork. You can rent your tree. So they have it in a pot. They bring it to your house. They collect it after Christmas, bring it back to their place, put it in the pot, keep it for you for next year. So it's a nice eco-friendly way of having a Christmas tree, because we still don't know. And if there is scientific research out there, please point us in its direction. Which is the most eco-friendly, an artificial tree or a real tree? We still don't know. The internet, it loves a good old gag, and particularly a running gag. And then with Christmas, there's sort of traditional gags that come up every year. And this is the one that's been going for a few years. And they're wondering if Chris Rea has started driving home for Christmas yet. I'm driving home for Christmas. Sorry, that's too soon. There's a law, isn't there? There's a rule. People in security outfits come down and pull me out of the building for even suggesting a Christmas song, never mind playing a bit of it. Anyway, so but they're saying, the funny people on the internet, that between the price of petrol and increased tolls, that he'll be getting the bus home for Christmas at this stage. He could have an electric car, an EV, but I heard the man from AA this morning saying that with the cost of electricity and everything, that people with EVs aren't saving much money over people with petrol cars. So I wonder what sort of car Chris is driving. Sure, if he started walking at this stage, it's only November, he'd be home for Christmas. He doesn't have to drive at all. Now, Christmas party mode. There's no Christmas parties yet, so I'll leave that to one side. Yeah, I'll leave that to one side. Are you watching I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here at all? You know, Matt Hancock is in there. And the youngest member of the cast, if that's what you'd call it this year, is a guy called Owen Warner. He was born in 1999. I know, yeah. He is an actor, and he plays a guy called Romeo Nightingale, which is a very romantic name, in Hollyoaks. And he's a bit of a cad, his character is at least, a bit of a philanderer. Anyway, Owen's a big lad. He's buff, he goes to the gym, he consumes a lot of protein normally. Now he's in the jungle and it isn't available to him. So the poor chap, I've never seen anybody on telly as affected by hunger as this lad. Like, he's shrunken, obviously, and he's gone weak. He can barely talk. And now I think he's half hallucinating. So everything he sees, he imagines it as food. So Chris Moyles was talking to him last night about, you know, food and what's he think of when he sees various things.
Why does everyone insist on making me hungry?
But to be fair, anything would make you hungry. Table and chairs, what do you think of?
Sitting down for food.
Sofa.
Sitting down for food.
Okay. Walking down the street.
Standing up, eating food.
Right. Food. Okay. Yeah.
In bed.
Eating food. Laying down.
Yeah.
Poor chap. And he even volunteered for one of those bush tucker trials. He'd eat anything, you know. Embarrassing parts of kangaroos and all sorts. Anything. He'd eat anything. Matt Hancock burnt the rice the other morning during breakfast because he wasn't paying attention. And nobody wanted, because burnt rice, it's just not nice. But Owen stepped up to the dish and devoured everybody's leftover burnt rice. That's how hungry he is. The poor guy. Yeah. 20 years since Love Actually hit our screens. That just makes you feel old. The stars got together in America. Emma Thompson and Hugh Grant, and creator, as in director and writer, Richard Curtis, to sit down and talk about it. 20 years. Do you see, those sort of things make you feel old, don't they? We had Una on yesterday, Una Leonard, and Eamon was on. He was impressed by Una. Sweet Therapy is the name of her cookbook, and she has a story of how baking saved her life in a real way. She was on The Late Late, you would have seen her do it, and she was in yesterday. Anyway, Eamon says, Una Leonard, what an amazing young woman, what a great interview, and Ray, you gave her the space to be open and honest and be the amazing person she is. Well, I just, you know, let her talk. I felt nothing but admiration for Una, empathy with her love of food mixed with anxiety, going now to look for a book, and now it will sell out immediately, says Eamon. So that's nice. And the funny story of the day, well, it's not really the funny story of the day, but it's the one that allows us play a bit of music that you wouldn't normally play. Firefighters in the US state of Alaska have dealt with an unusual request for assistance from wildlife officers after a moose became stuck in a basement. So the spokesperson said it looks like the moose had been trying to eat some vegetation by the window well of a basement window and fell into it, and then fell into the basement to the glass. And then, of course, the moose... What was it? It was loose in the hoose.
Oops, man, there's a moose. Loose, oop, there's hoose.
Thanks, Lord Rockingham's 11. We have someone getting their junior cert, sorry, cycle results, but I think he's more interested in the World Cup, says Paul. Have you achieved? Sorry, did you get an achieve? Did you get an achieve? See, like, there are people involved in education and they're making us say a sentence like that. Did you get an achieve in English? Like, what? That doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment. But firstly, good afternoon. 515-51-RAY@RTE.ie. You don't hear a lot enough of Frank anymore.
You make me feel so young.
There you go, Frank Sinatra, You Make Me Feel So Young. We're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions each. In our Reeling in the Ears quiz, bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there is a prize for two people, a two-night stay at Dublin's Hard Rock Hotel. You're right smack in the middle of Dublin city centre. Loads of things to do. You might use it to take advantage of the January sales or spend those fabulous Christmas vouchers. They have a Material Girl package. They have their Sound of Your Stay programme with personalised playlist waiting for you on arrival. And you can get a record player and some vinyl, or you can get a Fender guitar and amp to rock out in style, or maybe you can get both. Hardrockhotel.com. Hardrockhotel.com. And that's before you look around the amazing memorabilia from David Bowie, Beyonce, Rolling Stones and lots more. So, here's our qualifying question today. Can you name the Culture Club singer who became the fourth celebrity to leave I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here on Tuesday night? Can you name the Culture Club singer who became the fourth celebrity to leave I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here on Tuesday? Was it Boy George or Boy Dave? 0818-715-925. That's 0818-715-925. And good luck with that. Now, yesterday we were mentioning that the Eurovision is changing. Viewers' votes will now decide the countries qualifying for the semi-finals, and viewers in non-participating countries will be able to vote online for the first time. To tell us more about this and how it will affect our chances is Michael Keely, Ireland's head of delegation for the Eurovision Song Contest. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Interesting developments in the world of Eurovision.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose it was inevitable after the voting irregularities, in quotation marks, were discovered after the Eurovision this year.
Will you remind us about them?
Well, six countries had their jury votes disqualified in May because the EBU, who are the overseeing organisation that run the competition, they had detected irregular voting patterns among these particular countries.
Right.
And as a result, they disqualified their jury vote. So, I mean, you can read whatever you want into irregular voting patterns, but most people sort of read
and only yesterday, Michael, I was saying that the World Cup should take a leaf out of the Eurovision's book. I take that back, if you don't mind. So now, for the voting for the semi-finals, it's all public vote, and they've opened it out to the rest of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be public voting back in the early 2000s. You know, they had just a phone vote deciding it, and then they introduced a sort of 50-50 jury and phone vote. Mm. And that has been the system for, you know, the last 15 or so years, as far as I know. And so now they're to eliminate further possibility of irregular voting patterns being detected amongst the juries, they've decided to abolish the jury element, and we're going back to public phone vote. So there's good points and bad points about it, I suppose, you know.
So the rest of the world, so if I'm in India or China, I will be able to vote now on the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah, sorry, that's the other new thing they've introduced. So if you take it that there are, let's say, 16 countries in a semi-final,
yes,
those 16 countries get to vote, obviously. They're going to introduce basically a 17th vote, and
uh-huh,
that would be everybody around the world will be able to vote, and they'll be counted as one country,
right,
if you know what I mean.
Yes, yes, yes.
So if you're in America, you can vote for Ireland. If you're in the Middle East, you can vote for Ireland. If you're in Australia, you can vote for us. So there's hopefully there'll be a few expat votes,
yes,
for us.
Yes, we'll be depending on the diaspora to help us out. Now, just,
well, we're not the only people that have a diaspora.
Yeah. I suppose ours, we'd like to think, are more loyal and more active than others. That's the way we see ourselves, isn't it? Just before we move on to how it affects our chances, or how you think it'll affect our chances, jury votes are in place for the final then?
Yeah, they've kept the jury votes for the final. And, you know, I think it's no bad thing, because if you remember the system they operate now, it's got plenty of drama in it, you know, where they allocate the jury votes first in the Eurovision,
yes,
and then they allocate the public votes, and there's dramatic changes towards the end.
But from the outside looking in, if they're abolishing the juries for the semi-finals because there was irregular voting, and they're keeping them for the final, to me that doesn't make sense.
Well, I suppose, I mean, there's no system is going to be perfect.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Okay.
So that's
right.
Unfortunately,
okay.
There's going to be compromises somewhere, and to keep the drama in the final, I think they've decided to keep the, you know, keep the jury votes in, and to risk the, you know, I mean, they do, and in fairness, they do keep a very close eye on those, you know, the juries and how they vote, and they're very, very strict criteria that they give us. So when we're appointing a jury, you know, there's a long list of criteria that they have to adhere to.
So
you know,
it's just those six countries that got through the net this year. But anyway,
well, they're the ones that they identified.
Right,
yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Now, how do you think it's going to affect us not having a jury vote for the semi-final? We've only got to the final once out of the last 7 years. Am I correct on that?
Yeah. Now, well, if you look at this year, our song, Brooke's song, That's Rich, didn't do that well with the juries, but we did pretty well with the public vote. So we came 11th out of 17 or 18 on the public vote, but we only came 16th, I think, out of 18 on the jury vote. So
So, well, now, in fairness, we're in the bottom half in both, and we came 15th out of 18 in that semi-final.
That's true. But my point is that we did better with the public. So
marginally, Michael. I know you.
Well, we just missed out by the skin of our teeth on a place.
Right,
it was just 11. To do with
if
the
it was just
vote.
Oh, fair enough, fair enough.
If it was
right,
just the public
enough,
vote, we would have just missed enough, it. So I think. To be honest, I think it might improve our chances a little bit. I mean, I was always slightly suspicious of the jury vote. I felt that we never really got a fair shake, you know, over the last few years of the jury vote. And this year, I think it's proven that our suspicions may not have been misplaced, put it that way, you know.
How long have you been doing it, Michael?
I've been doing it continuously since 2013. So that's...
Right. 9 years.
9 years, yeah. This will be going to my 10th year. And then I did one infamous year with a very close pal of yours in 2008.
That's when everything went wrong for us. That's what some people said. That's when everything went wrong.
Some people might argue that, exactly. That's where it all started. Okay. The rot set in. But
now, here's the thing, Michael Keely. I'm just wondering, are we doing it right? We're obviously not doing it right. And I'm just looking at how the Eurovision has changed, even over the last few years. Like, the Armenian song that came 20th in the Eurovision has 330 million streams on Spotify. So there's something, I don't know what that says about anything, but go on.
No, I was going to say, the competition has gotten fiercer. Like, there's no doubt about it. I mean, anybody who looks at the Eurovision in the last couple of years can't help but notice how it's an extremely professional competition. We're up against the best of European acts.
Yeah, so here's the thing, Michael. And it's obviously a shop window for these acts. Like, that the Italian one, the one, what's the name of it? I can never remember their name. Mannequin or
Mannequin, yeah.
Yeah, so they became world superstars as a result of the Eurovision. They were poised and ready to go, and the Eurovision gave them the launching pad. What I'm thinking is, why can't we convince people, say like Dermot Kennedy, he was there on Grafton Street last night singing out of a balcony in Bewley's. He had thousands of people holding up their phones on Grafton Street, packed out. Why can't we convince somebody like him to represent us in the Eurovision?
I think there's a different view. Like, we view it slightly differently. Our people in Ireland and the UK view it slightly differently to other people in Europe. Maneskin were a big act in Italy before they entered Eurovision.
Yeah.
They were on the cover of the Italian Rolling Stone. They had, you know, million followers on Instagram or whatever. So they were already a big act on their way. They were signed to Universal Music. You know, they were behind them. So we definitely have not attracted that caliber of act over the last number of years. And I'm hoping the perception of the competition has kind of slightly changed, because Maneskin have helped, I think, a lot of acts here realize that, you know what, you can enter this thing and nobody's going to think the worst
of you. Any less
of
you, yeah.
Exactly. And you can enter and not even qualify. And, you know, it's not going to damage your career. Brooke, this year, hasn't stopped working since the Eurovision in May.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, she's an absolute phenomenal artist in her own right, obviously. But the Eurovision only added fans to her fan base.
But here's the thing, Michael. Do you and RTE not have to create some sort of a system that encourages, allows, you know, some sort of carrot system that would encourage somebody? And I'm just choosing Dermot Kennedy because he has a new album out and he's in the news.
Yeah. But
because if you put an ad or whatever in, you know, songs for the 2023 Eurovision song, entries on postcards, like, that's not going to attract Dermot Kennedy.
No, so, but I've been going around Rays, you know, trying to persuade people to, like, professional acts to get involved in this thing for as long as I've been doing
it.
And
who have you approached?
Well,
over the years?
I don't want to give. I want to start listing names because that would be unfair to people. But I, the carrot is, you get to appear on stage in front of nearly 200 million people.
Yeah.
So, like, that. Why, if you're a performer and you're a serious performer, why would you be scared of that? You know. And also, people say, well, we don't like the competition element of it. We don't like, you know, whatever. And I always say to them, well, look, the music business is a competition.
Yeah.
The charts are a competition, you know. So, like, use those excuses. They're not really excuses, yeah. if you ask me, you know. So I think, but I think the perception that has frightened a lot of people, and it's a false perception, because, you know, I say around Europe and around the rest of the world, it doesn't have the same kind of, you know, people think it's a sort of an amateur competition here.
Yeah.
Some people think it's for have-a-go heroes. Some people think it's for, you know, kind of circus acts and whatever. It's not. So
like I'm thinking about like other people like Tolu, Wild Youth, and there's loads of others that probably aren't even on my radar.
Well, now Wild Youth have expressed an interest in taking part very publicly, yeah. And so I don't mind saying that I've been talking to them, absolutely.
Right.
You know, and because they've mentioned it too, and other people have come out and said that they would like to take part. So do you
sense a sea change then in the attitude to the Eurovision Song Contest?
I do, because I think people are beginning to realise the opportunity that this presents. And as I said to you, like I've been, you know, going around talking to people quietly in lots of ways, because I don't want to frighten people off either. But I've been trying to persuade people of the opportunity that this is. And I think, as I said, I think suddenly now there's been a bit of a light bulb moment for some people in the music industry here. After Maneskin, you know, Maneskin became one of the biggest, as you said, one of the biggest acts on the planet on the back of the Eurovision. You know, they're filling out arenas in America. They're in the top 10 in America. They're absolutely enormous. So that is the opportunity that we're presenting to people.
But here's the thing now. So you've been talking to Wild Youth. And are you then going to open it to everybody? You know,
it is open to everybody.
It is open to everybody.
I mean, yeah, because there's a
Eurosong. How come you're talking to Wild Youth then? That seems unfair.
No, because, well, I'm talking to everybody. Anybody who wants to talk to me has my number,
right.
Ray. I don't make a secret of it, or my email. So anybody who wants to talk to me about Eurovision, I'm always available to talk to them about it. And so if they wanted to talk about it, and I was absolutely there to talk them through,
great.
You know, my experience of it or what it would be like if they were to take part, you know. So they've decided that they want to have a go. At least that's what they say on their social media channels. And
this is very exciting, because then people, if they see Wild Youth doing it, they might row in and want to do it as well. It sounds very exciting.
So there's a Eurosong. So we've had an open process since the beginning of October, where people could enter on rte.ie, I've received over 300 songs now at the moment, so we haven't sat down to listen to them all yet, but we're going to start pushing them out to different panels to try and shortlist. So the ultimate end of that process will be, you know, five or six acts appearing on the Late Show then, you know, in early February, and we'll have
Do you think that's the best system?
Well, I do you know what? I would love to do a Swedish-style Euro, or whatever they call it, Melody Festival, where they do arena shows. They have, you know, they start off with about 35 acts and they whittle them down to one or whatever over a period of time. Like, I would love to do that. That's my ultimate ambition, is to end up producing a kind of a standalone Eurovision show here. Unfortunately, there's this organisation, as you know, has lots of different competing projects for a limited pool of money, and this, unfortunately, this wouldn't be seen as one of the top priorities, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if they got a good sponsor. If you got a good sponsor, Michael, you might, you know.
Oh, listen, I'm happy to talk to any sponsors as well. Anybody at all who wants to come along and help this project off the ground and put it in the big arena.
The only thing, just not to leave on a bum note, but the last time you did a standalone show, I think, was the time we selected Dustin to go to.
I think looking back on that, we probably, you know, we might do it again. Like we had it just open to a public vote. We didn't have any juries involved at that stage. So I think Dustin had a big fan base that he managed to mobilise quite easily to.
I'd stand over us sending Dustin to Eurovision. I think the biggest joke ever. Maybe the laugh was on us at the end, but still.
we all got it. I'm not sure everybody else around Europe got it.
Michael, great to talk to you. Thanks
good
so
to
much.
Talk to you, Ray.
Talk to you. Bye, bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, if I was to say the name Anna Haslam, to you. Would you know about her? No, you probably don't. And you probably don't know that it's the centenary of her death next Monday. Well, a lady who knows all about Anna Haslam and is going to tell us about her is Carmen Lee Callig. And Carmen Lee Callig joins me in studio. Good afternoon, Carmel.
Good afternoon, Ray.
And you didn't know anything about Anna Haslam?
No.
So what piqued your interest?
So quite by accident, I was in St. Stephen's Green about 4 years ago, and I happened to sit on the bench that is dedicated to Anna and her husband, Thomas. And I looked at the inscription and I said, how come I've never heard about this woman? So I went away, did some research, and I really feel she merited a book.
Right.
So,
Can you remember roughly what the inscription said?
The inscription said, it's actually in the book, it's dedicated to herself and her husband Thomas for their work in the enfranchisement of women.
Right.
Yeah.
So she was an Irish suffragette.
Yes.
Right.
Born in Youghal.
Yeah, go on.
1829. And lived a long life through the famine as a Quaker. Worked disproportionately, I'd have to say. And that's when you're looking for a subject, Ray, and this is my fourth centenary Irish history title, it has to grab you and there has to be something to keep you, like everything, interest makes you want to, it motivates you. So I read the adult books. There were mainly chapters about Anna and her husband, and it's a happy ending because she got to vote.
Yes, yeah.
So that's an extra prize, if you like.
So tell us about it. Born in Youghal.
Yeah.
What were her family like? She was born into a Quaker family,
Yeah. She was the 16th of 17 children. Her father was a corn miller in Kinsale Beg. And again, because I don't know the area that well, I had to go down and drive. Mm. So the last thing you want is inaccuracies in your book. And the father was a corn miller, Abraham Fisher. She was born Anna Fisher, Anna Maria Fisher. And, you know, the Quaker, there's something very attractive as well about the Quaker ethos, you know, their beliefs, their way of life, the simplicity. 200 years ago, girls were given the same education as boys. That sort of stuff was just drawing me in all the time, Ray.
Yeah.
So, so she was the 16th of 17 children, homeschooled till she was 11, then went to Newtown, which is only over the border in County Waterford. But at that time, it would have taken 10 hours in horse-drawn carriage to travel the 50 miles. So this, again, you're always looking for something that children might just cock their ears up a little bit more for. So, she was there for 2 years. Then, as was the tradition, she went over to Castlegate School. It's now known as the Mount.
So that's a Quaker school in England.
Yeah, Quaker boarding schools all the time. So again, you know, depending on what family you were born into, that was the path you followed, everybody. And then she trained as a teacher, which was 1840s, you know. Met her husband. She only taught for 1 year in Ackworth, and all these schools survive today. You know, Newtown, the Mount, and this is the one nice bit of the research: you get to go and visit places associated with the person. So that was lovely, and everybody has been so helpful and courteous, right down to the editing of the book.
Did herself and Tom meet?
So he was teaching. Again, this displays the equality. She had a teaching job in the same school. I suppose the two Irish people, he was from Mount Mellick, you know, they were similar age. He's about 4 years older than her, and got talking in the staff room. I'm not too sure. But they both left on the same day. Again, I was able to find records of her time. She earned the princely sum of £20 for her year as an assistant teacher. He went to London and she came back to Youghal, and it was the height of the famine at this stage. So again, there was, I suppose, a grip for me there with the famine. I hadn't written about that before, and it's obviously something we all know a little bit about. And again, displaying there were 3,000 Quakers at the time of the famine in a population of 8.5 million.
Right. Tiny.
And disproportionately. But because of their business networks, they were able to act quickly. And also, a lot more than that, they were able to invest their own money.
So they were millers?
They were millers, corn millers, importing and exporting.
Right.
Yeah.
So they were able to feed the locals.
Yes,
then,
exactly. So, but also not just in Youghal and Waterford, everywhere there was a Quaker network.
So there's one in Kildare as well.
Yes,
Ballintore.
Mount Mellick, of course. There were places that were Well, Mount Melick was the first Quaker town back in 1657. So, yeah, so through that network and through having a bit of money, they weren't afraid to use their own money. Mm. So every time I think a Quaker can't do anything else, they go another step.
Right.
So at a time when corn was being exported from Ireland during the famine, Anna's brothers, now remember they would have been 20 years older than her because she was the 16th or 17th, they were importing Indian corn, or maize as we commonly know it. But not only that, using their own money to do that, they showed people how to make it into porridge.
Right.
So you can imagine this new yes. food would be worse than useless if somebody didn't say this is how you use it. So the soup kitchens obviously was the easiest way, you know, to provide nutrition for people. And again, through their networks in England, you know, the soup urns and everything were brought over. The pots.
So they saved lives. They saved
all
lives.
All saved, saved, yeah.
So
yeah.
When did the suffragette aspect of her life come into
so
play?
So she was always interested in women's rights, and she was instrumental as well in the founding of Alex, as we know it, Alexandra College, with another Quaker lady, Annie Jellicoe, in 1866. But her real passion and her realisation was that women needed to be able to vote. And 1876, I call it the pioneering, pioneering suffragette, because she was the first. Now, when I was growing up, Ray, I'd heard about Hannah Shee Skeffington, you know, but I'd never heard about Anna Haslam.
So she was the first Irish suffragette.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. And in the book, I make a distinction because I didn't want to call the book Pioneering Suffragist. There's a slight difference of spelling. But suffragist is the peaceful suffragette.
Uh-huh.
Whereas, as we know, to get attention, you know, the Hannah Shee Skeffington and
protests
others.
Protests at yes. races and all sorts
yeah.
of things. Yeah.
But Anna Haslam, her way was a peaceful, you know, she was an educated, articulate woman. She could write to MPs of the day and just worked tirelessly behind the scenes. And also her husband, I must, you know, talk about him because of the time, even though the Quakers believed in equality, they lived in an Ireland where women's voices weren't heard.
No, we know.
So having him there at yes. the meetings and having his uh-huh. support and having him writing, you know,
and,
all
and
helped.
Their relationship was described as idyllic.
Yes. So again, you know, for some reason, Thomas had a falling out with the Quakers, and as a result, they couldn't marry in the traditional meeting house ceremony. And in 1854, again, I was able to go back to the Cork Registry Office and see the marriage certificate and see that her two witnesses were Fishers. So I don't think they fully fell out with her family,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
And how did they refer to each other?
My dear and my darling and love.
Right.
And within a week of getting married, which again was so progressive in many ways, they decided to commit their lives to the good of others, and in particular the progression of women and women's rights, by not having children of their own.
Right.
Now that, I'm sure, raised a few eyebrows because she was one of 17, you know. And it's the commitment, the lifelong commitment is the thing that I just, is awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
And we heard an awful lot in the centenary celebrations that oftentimes women were written out of history. Now, how do you write somebody out of history? I don't know, but just omit it out of history. So it's important that we know about Anna Haslam and her contribution to get the vote.
Yeah.
And you say it's a happy ending.
Yes.
So she was in her 90s.
She was just coming up to her 90th birthday. So that very important election of the 14th of December 1918, when Sinn Féin had the landslide victory, she, women over 30 were allowed vote. Women, educated women and women with property were allowed to vote. Unfortunately, and when I went back to Newtown to talk to students there a couple of months ago, Ray, they told me they went when they read this part of the book. Thomas had predeceased her by a year. And after being by her side.
He wasn't alive to witness it.
Unfortunately, no. I'm sure he was there in spirit, but she was brought along. She united all the different hues of Irish history. All women and men were there, you know, with bouquets of flowers for her to congratulate her, because they knew it was the first very important step. And within 4 years, of course, with the Irish Free State, then women over 21 got the vote. So she died 8 days before that. But I think she would have been happy enough that she had got to where she did.
What an amazing woman.
Yeah.
You fell in love with her.
I did. I kind of did. Because, and you know, I think the fact that she had no children of her own, I said, somebody needs to be writing. And when I went back to y'all, I couldn't find a direct descendant of Fisher there. Because again, they had given up so much. And I did find bankruptcy letters for her brothers and that they left the area.
And they gave up so much during the famine.
Yes. So they lost their businesses because of investing in the soup kitchen and trying to keep people alive. They basically lost, and many lost their lives because, remember, serving in a soup kitchen was hazardous. Sick people were coming in.
You're exposed to, disease. Yes.
So things like that, they paid the ultimate price. And as I say, unfortunately, there is nobody in Yall. You know, so this is why I feel.
Well, you're keeping her memory alive. Yeah. Anna Haslam, pioneering suffragette, and it's available in English and Oscailge.
Yeah.
Just a little bit about yourself. So you're out in the Lexicon Library in Dunleary, that amazing building. Controversial at the start, but what a lovely place to work.
Yes, it is an amazing place to work, Ray. And I've worked in the Dunleary Rathdown Library Service nearly 40 years. So, I started in the old Carnegie and now I've come full circle to the Lexicon,
Books have always been a huge part of your life.
Yes, I've always loved books and I love the research side. I love the history. My degree's in history and women's studies from UCD.
But you left school when you were 14, I believe, yeah. So,
No, I didn't. My parents did. So there weren't many books in my house.
Yes.
And we didn't have a library service when I was growing up because just wasn't, you know.
So your parents left school.
And then I'm the first in my family to go to university. So there's a few firsts here. But yes. Anna Haslam, as I said, was such, for me, writing for children as well, to have a role model. You know, to somebody who, again, the level of commitment, I think I might be overstating that, right?
I don't think you are. and you paint a lovely picture of the Quaker community as well.
Yeah. So progressive.
Through her story, yes.
I mean, silence, things that Quakers have been doing for centuries. We are now realising the mindfulness, the business, you know, the ethics of business. And sometimes I say to the children when I go in, do you know any Quakers? And they'll say no. And then I say, well, do you like Cadbury's? You know, does your mum ever go to Bewley's? Somebody was telling me the other day, Eason's were started by Quakers. So many are, they're thriving today. I'm not saying they're necessarily in Quaker hands today, but they started and we do know them.
Yeah.
The Clark's Shoes was another one.
Was it?
Yeah.
Big names. Yeah.
Very big names and still thriving.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, started in such an ethical way. People loved to work for Quakers because they shared, you know, any profits were shared as well. Yeah.
Probably need more of them around in 2022.
I think so. The peace loving, of course, and anti-slavery, they wouldn't import sugar from the plantations.
Yeah.
You know, in the 18th century.
And I know, because Jenny went to Newtown, that in school, they have these meetings in the morning where what everybody has a say, is it?
Yeah, just yeah. So you can sit in, there are a few ways from what, again, I'm researching, I've never attended one, but sometimes they start with a reading from the Bible. But normally it's peace, you know, headspace, peaceful time. You can stand up then if you want to say something. But it's the equality as well. We're all equal.
Yeah.
How lovely is that?
Yeah. Basic, simple, but so important.
Yeah.
Carmel, thanks so much. Grandmaga, thanks so much for coming in. And where can people get the book?
Yeah. So my website is www.carmelsbooks.com. Alan Hanna's website, so alanhannas.com as well are the main places. And
And Monday, 28th of November is the centenary of her death.
Yes, and I will be visiting two schools in Dunleary Rathdown, near to where Anna lies now, Anne Thomas, near Temple Hill in Black Rock. And that is my way and the book of paying homage to somebody that we should never forget.
Thanks so much, Carmel.
Thank you, Ray, for having me in.
Now, why isn't that firing? No. Computer says no. They'll have to do it.
Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551, The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Ronan, on the Eurovision, you asked where we went wrong in the Eurovision, maybe because we keep picking songs that we think will win, rather than picking songs for the sake of the songs. John and Kildare says, why are we talking in terms of loyalty when it should be about voting for the best song? Just saying, says John. And on Frank Sinatra, Jane in Wexford says, you just made my day playing Frank Sinatra, the best singer of all time. He used to be on the radio all the time. I haven't heard him in a long time, so it was nice to play him again. Now, have you ever walked past a gravestone and wondered about the person who's buried there and the life they've led? Well, a new company called The Story Of is using technology to tell the backstories of people, including putting QR codes on gravestones. And to bring us up to speed on all this, we have Judy Russell on the line. Hello, Judy.
Hello, Ray. You did a great introduction to
did
it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're a businesswoman, obviously, because you're plumb-awesome-y already. We haven't even started on your plumb-awesome-y. Anyway, good to talk to you. Good to talk to you.
You too.
So this is your invention, is it? Or have you imported it from somewhere else? Or whose idea was it?
Well, do you know, now I started off with trying to film my mum about 10 years ago. I remember setting her up in front of a camera and I was like, OK, tell me something that you'd pass on to future generations. What's the biggest lesson you've learned in your life? Tell me about your parents and how you got on with them. Like all of these things that she told me over the course of my life, but I never kind of got in one session.
Yeah.
So I did that with her and I harped on about it for about 8 years. And then I met someone else, another co-founder, Danny, who was trying to get a gravestone created for his grandfather. And he was just like really struck by how the limitation of characters that you could put on a gravestone. And he was like, surely there's another way.
Aha.
So he kind of came up with the QR code idea. And then I was like, if we can marry the two and we can have the video on the website and the QR code links to it, then it's a perfect solution.
It's brilliant.
But we've kind of learned a lot since then. Yeah.
So he wanted to put in place something that would tell people about his grandfather, Danzer Nagel, who was a boxer.
Exactly. And it's like his initial idea was actually to put an iPad into the gravestone. He was going to carve out but he couldn't come up with a solution for the battery power. So the QR code was an extension of that. But his grandfather was a famous boxer and he never met his grandfather.
Right.
So during the process of creating the story of his grandfather, he now feels like he's got like a connection to him because he went off and asked the cousins and found all the pictures and put it onto this website, which is just beautiful. That the QR code then is links to.
So the QR code is this little thing. People recognise them. They're all over the place now. And what would happen, or it's because you're in existence for a year, it's happened already. We come along to a gravestone with the QR code. We point our mobile phones, our smartphones at it. And then that brings us to a mini website with the story of the person who's buried in that grave.
Exactly. And
lovely.
I suppose the focus that I have, and it doesn't have to be, you know, like I've created one for my mum. So, you know, she's alive and kicking and she's having a great time. So she's sharing her web URL with her friends. Like, you know, she doesn't need a QR code yet, but one day we will put a QR code on her remembrance plaque or something.
And
like
is that engraved into it, embedded into it, or what way is it? Does it exist?
Just spoke to someone today about you can actually get them engraved into it, but it's very difficult.
Right.
So what we've come up with at the moment is a stick-on. I can't think of the name of the material. It's not acrylic. What is it?
It's long-lasting anyway. Well, it lasts forever.
Exactly. This aluminium, that's it.
This is genius. This is genius. I was watching a movie recently. It was an old one. I can't remember what it was. But this existed but it was sci-fi. So this was people thinking about the future. So when you pass by a headstone, a little video of the person came out and they told you about their lives. So, you know, people were imagining this before. So you're saying it's not exclusively for people who are alive or people who are dead. You either will work and your mother's still alive, Mary, and you've asked her these questions, which will appear eventually. What was your childhood like? What is your earliest memory? What did you do after school? Who did you marry? And how was your marriage? All those sort of things. And then there's pictures of her throughout the years. That'll be on her little website. So I think this is going to be huge.
Thank you. Would you do it yourself?
Yeah, well, you see, I'm going to be cremated.
And we could put it on the urn, or we could put it on your bench. You're probably going to have a statue somewhere. So we could put it
I don't think so. You are a plum awesome. No, that's not going to happen. Yeah, but the possibilities
are
endless.
I'm sure we could put you... next to Sonia Sullivan down in Cove with the QR code on the bottom of your fab.
Yeah, because, and as you say, I watched a little video on your website. So we have this technology and it gets slagged off, but there are so much positives about it, and it gives us an opportunity to tell stories.
Absolutely. And even, you know, I suppose the future, it's probably going to be a lot of virtual reality. I know that people are kind of scared of that. But, you know, imagine being able to wear glasses, and hopefully they won't be as big and heavy as they are right now, and walk into a graveyard. And exactly like you said, you know, the person kind of appearing in 3D.
Hologram,
now, that sounds
a
bit freaky. So,
no, but that is the future. Like, the technology is there already.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah,
but this is the beginning of it. So the story of, and it's .io, is it?
Yeah, apparently that's the new cool tech ending, because all the .coms are gone. So .io, a lot of tech companies are using now.
The story of .io, how much does it cost?
So we're allowing people to reserve their domain names for free. So you can reserve like the story of .io/Ray Darcy for free, so that's there. And then at the moment, what we're charging is €350 to help you curate your story, to help you kind of, you know, ask you the right questions that you'll send back to us, and images. And if you want to take videos, we can embed that, because at the moment we have to do everything manually. So I actually have to go into the back end of the website and attach everything. So what we're doing then is trying to actually get investors so that we can create a automated self-service platform.
Oh, yes. So you can do
nice
it yourself. So you can load up the pictures yourself. Exactly. Yes. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be huge, Judy Russell. The story of .io, the QR code on the gravestone. And as you pass by, you can find out about the person and the life they lived. Thanks very much, Judy. Mind yourself.
Brilliant to chat to you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gramaga, Kathleen, thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RT.ie. Ray, my mother worked for the Quakers in Waterford as a bookkeeper. She said they were all beautiful people. That's John. And thanks for bringing Anna Haslam's story to the airwaves. What could have been a forgotten story? We are planting a tree to mark Anna Haslam's death at Newtown Junior School on next Monday. That's Joan Johnson, Archives Newtown School. And on the Eurovision, why is our Eurovision entry not obviously Irish? A folk song or a traditional Irish band, that's what we do best, i.e. Emer Quinn, Clonid. You should know just by listening that it's the Irish entry. These generic bands or singers that could be from any country will not work for us. Well, the Ukrainian entry that won was a combination of hip-hop and traditional Ukrainian music, you know, so that could work. We did send Dervish, was it Dervish? They didn't do too well for us. So you don't know. You don't know. It's not an exact science. Now, let's get to our quiz. Reeling in the ears, that's what we call it. We have two quizzers standing by, and one of them's going to walk away with a prize, which is a two-night stay for two people in Dublin's Hard Rock Hotel. A bottle of bubbly waiting on arrival. It's right there in the middle of Dublin City. You can take advantage of the January sales or spend your fabulous Christmas vouchers. They've loads of packages going on that you can find out on the website hardrockhotel.com. They're a Material Girl package. Their iconic sound of your stay program, personalised playlist, vinyl, record players, Fender guitars, amps, the whole lot, and memorabilia thrown in just for good luck. Hardrockhotel.com. Hello, Simone Woods.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. You're in Limerick. Whereabouts in Limerick?
I suppose Limerick City, Ballysimon it's called.
Right. So you suppose it's Limerick City. Is it Limerick City?
Yeah,
it is Limerick City. Okay, right.
It is,
okay.
We're near Limerick City. It's just hard to say.
And you're collecting the children from school?
I am. I'm just finished a school run. I was collecting my 12-year-old daughter with the other three kids in the car as well.
Grace is what age?
12.
Right, yeah, sorry, you just said that. Then there's Alex, age?
2, and then I have 7-month-old identical twin boys, Kyle and Leo.
Wow. That's a busy car you have there, yeah.
It's a very busy, but they're all very good.
And are there twins in the family?
No twins.
No.
No, none whatsoever. So it was a huge shock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's 7-month-old identical boys, Kyle and Liam. Yeah.
They were born on my grandmother's 93rd birthday as well, so it was a lovely surprise.
Brilliant. That's brilliant,
isn't it? In her family, yeah.
Oh, that was, and she was there to, well, not there to witness it, obviously, but she knew about them, you know what I mean?
She
wasn't in the labour ward or anything.
No.
That'd be weird. That'd be very weird. So you're still on maternity leave?
I am. I'm going on to parental leave now soon.
Oh, great.
So hopefully back after Christmas.
Okay. And who's at home then when you get home?
Paul, their father, say, and then just the four of them.
Yeah, yeah. And you?
Yeah.
Are you watching I'm a Celeb?
I am. I kind of thought it was a bit boring now this year because they all seem to be picking on Matt Hancock.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm glad now boy George has gone. He kind of grated on me.
Did he?
Yeah. I think he was a bit up himself. He hated that Matt Hancock got all the viewing.
Yeah, it was about Boy George, wasn't it? It was about Boy George.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
In fairness to him, he had the stories.
He did.
If you were going to have a competition about the stories and the name dropping, Boy George was going to win. That's
100%.
Now you've never seen Love Actually. I can't believe that.
Never. Yeah, I was only saying it to your colleague that I've never seen that or Bridget Jones.
What?
I'm more into the crime stuff. I know.
Yeah. Have you seen Notting Hill?
No.
Four Weddings and a Funeral?
I've seen that one with Hugh Grant in it, yeah.
Yeah. Love Actually is lovely. Emma Thompson's in it, obviously. Liam Neeson's in it. Isn't that Love Actually? Is that the other one? Am I thinking another one? No, I think that's it. Yeah, that's it. No, you'll enjoy it. And you'll enjoy Bridget Jones as well. So you can put them in your diary for over the Christmas. Mind you, with 7-month-old twins, you probably won't have much time to do that.
I was saying I'll lock myself in the room for a few days and just watch them all.
You're up against Audrey Driver from County Tip. How are you doing, Audrey?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. Whereabouts in Tip are you?
So I'm from Rosscrea in Tipperary.
Yeah, right. I know Rosscrea well, yeah. But you work in County Leash.
Yeah, I'm a community nurse in Rathdowney in Leash, so big shout out to them all down here.
Yeah, so what does that entail? You're out and about checking in on newborn babies, etc. Is that it?
Well, I don't do the babies, I just do the adults. So I'm out and about checking in on adults and doing wound care and home health applications, that type of thing. So you'd be kept going.
Changing dressings, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And you're a company as well, aren't you?
I'm what?
Company for people.
Oh, yeah, that's they love to see you coming. Yes, you are company. Sometimes people don't see you from one end of, you know, don't see anybody from one end of the day to the next. So they look forward to the nurses. Visit.
Yeah, which is nice that you're doing that, isn't it? That must make you feel good
inside.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Lovely. It's a lovely job, yeah.
Now, in 2023, where are you going to be?
Oh, yeah. I told your researcher I had a little midlife crisis there at the beginning of this year. So I've signed up to climb Kilimanjaro in February.
That's no mean feat. That's a big one.
I know. It is a big one, all right. I'll send you a postcard if I reach the summit. So
I don't need to have any post boxes up there, Audrey.
No. Pigeon or something.
Yeah, pigeon. How are you training for it?
So I'm just doing loads of hiking. I've joined a hiking group called Hiking Buddies Ireland. Yeah. And we do loads of hiking at weekends all around Ireland and a few in Wales and England as well. So just getting out and about on the feet.
What's your highest point so far?
Well, I've done Carn Tuil in Ireland and I've done Snowdon in Wales.
Yeah. And would you notice then the altitude sickness on those two?
No, not on them.
No.
I'm okay with those. So I have never experienced altitude sickness, so hopefully it won't hit me too hard.
Yeah, great. And are you doing it just for yourself or for...
Just for myself, I'm not doing it for a charity or anything, just for myself, that's my own little challenge.
Yeah, that's good to do because you don't feel under too much pressure then if you don't do it. Because when you go around asking people, that's it. That's just an extra pressure that you don't want to be handling.
But you have to reach the top.
Yeah, exactly. Right, it's Audrey versus Simone. And you know the deal, three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. Go for a shorter clip, it's more difficult. So you get 2 points for that. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if it's a draw on points, we go to a tie break question. Good luck. Here we go. Okay, Simone, you're up first. The year is 1993.
Okay.
Right, which is what, 29 years ago. And we're starting at the movies. Do you want to go long or short?
Short, please.
Okay. This movie, starring Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, was a big hit in 1993. Can you name it? Here's your short clip.
I don't think I could let a woman pay for dinner.
Great. They'll throw a parade, Your Honor. You'll be man of the year.
Well.
I'm trying to picture her now. Sorry, one second. Tom Hanks.
Yeah, and Meg Ryan. No, no.
Okay.
It's Sleepless in Seattle. And as it, you haven't seen Love Actually, that's in the same vein as nothing there. Okay, Audrey, movies from 1993. What do you want to do?
I'll go short.
Short, okay. Can you name this movie from 1993 starring Harrison Ford as a man who was framed for the murder of his wife?
With all due respect, Sheriff Rollins, I'd like to recommend checkpoints on a 15-mile radius at I-57, I-24.
Well?
The Fugitive.
Is correct. 2 points for you. Have you seen that, Simone?
No.
That's a great movie as well. I'm jealous, do you know, because I've seen all these. I'd love to be seeing them for the first time. Anyway, on to music for you. 1993.
Okay.
You have to sort of, are you going long or short?
Short, please.
Short, okay. This song hit the top of the Irish charts in 1993. Can you name the song or the singer? Short clip.
So goodbye.
Yeah.
Please don't.
I heard a yeah
so Whitney
there.
Houston.
Yes.
Yeah, Whitney Houston. I will always love you.
Yeah, 2 points. You're on the scoreboard. Good stuff.
Okay.
Audrey, music from 1993, long or short?
Short, please.
Short. Another hit from 1993. Again, the name of the song or the name of the singer?
Some nights are like nothing I've ever seen before. Will again.
Meatloaf.
Yes. I'd do anything for love, but I won't do that. 2 points there. Now, Simone, Audrey's on four.
Okay.
So you have to go short and hope that she falters on the final question.
Okay.
And if that happens, then we're into a tiebreak situation. That's if you get this question right. So it's news and current affairs. Are you going short?
Short.
You're short. Okay. In 1993, this man was re-elected as Taoiseach. Can you name him? Short clip.
First of all, to reflect the partnership that we are embarking upon, an office of the Taoiseach will be situated in government buildings.
I know that it's Albert Reynolds.
It is Albert Reynolds, yes. Well done. So, you get 2 points for that. You're on four. You can't do any more. Audrey, you're on four too, but you do have this question in hand. So if you get anything from this, you're today's winner. What do you want to do?
Okay. I'll go long, please.
Go long. Okay. What singing competition hosted by Ireland took place in Mill Street in Cork in 1993?
For RTE, bringing the show from the County Cork town of Mill Street is a major challenge.
This giant steel dish and a man-made star will link Mill Street in County Cork with 33 countries next Saturday night.
The Eurovision?
It is the Eurovision. Yeah, we were talking about it earlier on. You get a point for that. You're today's winner. Well done, Audrey. Simone,
well
sorry
done,
about
Audrey.
That, yeah. You'll have to brush up on your rom-coms. That's your weak spot. That's your weak spot. Rom-coms are your weak spot. So, yeah. So
I bought the notebook just to let you know. So it might make you proud.
Yeah, a week over Christmas, locked in the room, rom-coms only. Okay, and we'll talk to you in the new year. Thanks, Simone. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup.
Thank you so much.
Great. See you, Simone. Well done. Audrey, you are on the way to the Hard Rock Hotel in Dublin.
That's brilliant. Thanks so much, Ray. That's super.
Yeah, so you can go to hardrockhotel.com and it'll tell you all that's on offer there. Loads of things to do. The memorabilia, the vinyl, the Fender, all that stuff. Congratulations,
brilliant.
Audrey. Well done. See you now. Bye.
Thanks, Millie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now on this Wednesday afternoon, we say hello and good afternoon to Gerard Farley. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm good.
Good to see you.
It's great to see you.
Now, this is brilliant because the measure of the success of a comedian in this country is Vicar Street.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is.
It's scientific.
It's the dream. It's once you start, it's like, when do I play there?
Yeah.
When does that happen?
When do I headline Vicar Street? Because you've played it.
I've played it so many
Street.
Times.
Yes.
I think somebody said during the pandemic that I was the comedian that had played it the most without ever doing a solo show there.
Right. I was the bridesmaid.
Yeah, I'm a professional bridesmaid. I've been a bridesmaid for 10 years.
Because you used to support Joan Rivers, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I did shows with Joan Rivers in, 2012, I think it was. Yeah. I mean, even looking back on that, it was such a strange thing to do. I mean, that's just literally a phone call out of the blue. Will you support Joan Rivers? Send us the tape. So I sent it through to Aiken and they sent it through to Joan Rivers and she watched it. And then it came back, yes. And then before we did the show, she said, you've got a bit about the nativity. Would you mind just dropping that? Because I finish on a nativity joke. I was just like, wow, no problem.
So she watched it.
Oh, she watched it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we did full walkthrough of the rehearsal where, you know, she said, do you want the band on or do you want the band off? What do you want to do? Like, it was really, really fun. And then when we went to Brighton, I did a show with her in Brighton and we were walking through the show and she stepped on a piece of tape and she kind of almost stumbled. And then they got the, like, the promoter in. And she made a show of them. She was like, this will be the Joan and Garrod Centre if I trip. If one of my people fall in here. It was really, really funny.
Yeah.
But she was, yeah, she was amazing. What a legend. Right. Like.
So it is happening Saturday, the 11th of March. It's sold out. The show is called The Glamour Hammer. So you're putting on an extra date, Saturday, 25th of March, 2023.
Yes.
Two dates.
Two of them. Yeah. I'm delighted because I also sold two Liberty Halls before that. So I was just, yeah, I'm still kind of shocked. I'm in, I think it's the Joanne bubble. You know,
Joanne McNally
exploded and some of them have found me and I'm very happy to slip into that stream.
Right. No, because people may not know this because we know each other from way back.
Yeah.
And you worked in an office job.
Yeah, yeah, I did, yeah. Yeah, I worked as a computer programmer until 2015.
Right.
And I was always just about to leave. And then, you know, it was hard to take the big step. But then 2015, I finally bit the bullet just in time to, you know, work something up and then have a pandemic.
And so it nearly came full circle for you, did it? You were nearly returning to the office.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I always feel like I'll only get one more tour out of this. Surely there can't be anything left in it. But when my tour got cancelled in 2020, I thought, well, I mean, this is indefinite. Like, when do I go back to earning money? So I thought, well, I'll have to go back and be a developer. But I don't know if you know this, but there's not a lot of demand for developers that have 5 years of stand-up comedian experience.
Right. It's not
as essential as you might think. The smart-ass programmer is just not what people want.
So now that you say it.
I know, it's quite annoying.
You can't really blame them for not taking you seriously because that's the last thing you want people to do is take you seriously.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's good, yeah.
So I thought, okay, well, I'll go back and I'll study, but I need to do something. I need to earn money. So I almost took a job as a postman. I did two interviews to be a postman and on post. And then Joanne McNally talked me out of it. She just said, hang tight and come on tour with me.
Right.
So I did.
So you were getting the postman's job, but actually stand up, that's an addition, isn't it?
When you're
a postman, yeah.
Yeah, I think being a postman, I just thought, well, that's a nice job. Yes,
it is. And you're talking, you're meeting people.
Yeah. Everything has to be delivered in a pandemic.
And now with the number of packages, you're bringing smiles to a lot of people's faces. Now, there are bills as well, but there's a lot of packages.
Exactly, yeah. And I kind of wish I wish I'd kind of done it for a week and then I could have wrote a sitcom about it.
And then you could do knock-knock jokes as well, couldn't you? Maybe you get fired in that.
Yeah, I think, like, it was strange because everybody thought it was this reaction that was like, no, it will come back. And I'm like, no, but, like, people do have to change jobs. Like, that's the way the world works. Yeah. You know, if your work goes in one thing, you've got to
do something else. But it must have been tough for you because you made that big decision and made the leap back in 2015 from an office job.
Yeah.
And then you were sort of saying to yourself, well, this hasn't worked out.
Well, yeah, I think because I think that that's what, if you do anything that's creative, you know, or even if you strike out and start your own business, I think what everybody hates to be told is that's the wrong thing. You've made a mistake.
Yes, yeah.
You idiot. Why didn't you stick with the permanent pension rule? And I think that's what happened to everyone that worked, you know, in the arts. We were all just like, uh-oh, this is the nightmare scenario.
Yes, yeah, big questions were asked of everybody. Yeah. So Joanne says, hold out, wait a minute.
So I did new material gigs with Joanne and she would say to me at the end of the new material gigs, look, when this tour... Like, I'm going on tour. I'm definitely going on tour. Will you be my support? And I was just, I said no at least 5 times. And they were very much...
Why did you say no?
Well, I felt, I've been touring as a support for years and I felt I just kind of struck out to be on my own. I was like, I don't want to go back and be a support. And I was like, no, I'll transition into something else. I'll do a little, you know, 10-day tour every year and that'll do me. But she was having none of it. And it was only, I think, when the Palladium came on, when she was booked to do the Palladium, I said, oh God, the Palladium would be amazing. She said, well, do support. And I said, okay, well, I'll do the Palladium. And she said, would you do the Vicar Streets? And I was like, yeah, I'll do the Vicar Streets and the Palladium. Grand. And then a week later, she's like, you're not leaving me to go around the country. Right. And then you just do the Vicar. And I was like, okay, grand.
I haven't been to a Joanne McNally gig.
Ray.
I actually, because the description of them is just, there are very few men at them.
Well, it depends on the night.
Right.
Like, I mean, at the start, they were... very female heavy and like locked female heavy. Right. You know, like they were wild parties. Because that was like, I think everything was.
The Prosecco Express, you know, and the name.
Yeah, yeah, it was, yeah, you know, big hen party vibes. But now it's just like a comedy.
I'm a huge fan. Joanne knows that. I'm a huge fan. Oh, yeah. And we've had her on here. We've had her on telly and everything.
Oh, she's amazing.
Amazing. Yeah,
but,
amazing.
But the... Yeah, I mean, depends on the night. Sometimes you go out and it's 50% men, 50% women, and they're all very polite and nice, and think, where did they come from? What, like, what's going on? And then the next night could be, you know, a party. It depends on what she was doing when she put that show on sale. what they bought it from.
Something she said on telly or on the podcast or whatever.
But she just seems to, like, her crowd are so diverse, even in the UK. Like, it's been great to see.
And yeah, that's what I'm saying. Great to witness. Because
it's great to be at the epicentre of it, because, like, we did it this 7-week period during March and April where we didn't have a day off. And we were going into it going, how are we going to do this? Like, but we just came through it. Like, I mean, it was like everywhere we go, she gets this massive reaction, and she also gets people that they're more her friend, I think, than they are
yes,
a fan.
Yes, yes.
You know,
it does show though that there was a pent up demand for female comedians.
Yeah, completely. They're really, and like we have great ones.
Yeah.
But I guess she's been the most mainstream. And just as soon as they jumped on it, like they really latched on.
So it allowed you to make these people laugh, which is brilliant, isn't it?
It's great, yeah. I mean, it's so funny because even when I started to sell, I remember having this conversation with my agent, and they were like, oh my God, it's unbelievable how quick this is going. I was like, it's not that unbelievable. Yeah. I'm actually very good at this, I'll have you know.
but I'd say comedy is a confidence thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah. It's an on-stage confidence. Like, I find I'm grand. When I go on, like, I wouldn't even think about going on stage. You know, at this point, I'm so practiced and I'm match fit this year. But if I was in a conversation, I would much rather listen than talk.
Okay.
Maybe that's just the year.
No, but what I'm saying to you is, like, because you've done so many gigs and because you're so match fit and you know that people laugh at your material... That gives you this.
Oh, yeah.
And people feed off that.
Yeah, of course. And it's a great year for it to step up as well, because, you know, I'm not worried about going into the bigger rooms. It'll be fine.
You've been there.
It'll be fine.
Yeah. So, Glamour Hammer, Vicar Street, first one sold out, extra date added, Saturday, 25th of March, 2023. You're a Eurovision fan because you do the agony rants with Niamh Kavanagh.
Do you know what? This is the problem. The Eurovision's wasted on me.
Oh, is it?
It's terrible. Like, all of my friends are absolute Eurovision nuts. Like, even my boyfriend is a Eurovision nut. Like, I was away with Niamh last week and I left my jacket in her car. And she had to drop it in to my boyfriend because I was away. And he was like, oh my God. I got to meet her and I was chatting to her for a few minutes. He was absolutely thrilled with himself. But I barely even watch it. It's terrible.
I'm disappointed now. I thought we'd have another at least 30 seconds to talk about the Eurovision.
I loved it back in the day because a pop song played in an orchestra was just...
Yes, I mean,
that sounds amazing. Like, I was just sitting outside. It was really bizarre because the... orchestra were rehearsing outside and Ryan Tuberty walked by in a Christmas jumper. I said, oh my God, what's happened?
Welcome to the Dream Factory.
I feel like this is for me. It's like Willy Wonka.
That's not every day, Gerard. We put it on specially for you.
Thank you.
Great to see you. Just Ticketmaster, I suppose, the usual. The usual, isn't it? Ticketmaster. Yep. Thanks, Gerard. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3:00. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.